I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Chris Guillebeau joins me now. He is a writer, entrepreneur, and traveler. He's written a new book, The $100 Startup, Reinvent the Way You Make a Living, Do What You Love, and Create a New Future. He joins me now to tell us about the book. He's in his early 30s, and he's already been in something like 175 countries. He doesn't have a conventional job, a real job, if you will, or has earned a regular paycheck. He has, however, turned ideas into income, and it supported his adventurous lifestyle. In this book, he finds others like him. These are people who've found what they like doing, taken their passion for doing it, and pursued what they find meaningful without having to raise a great deal of seed money. You learn in this book to start small, $100 or less, and in some of the cases written about, find it could yield $50,000 or more. The book is more than that, though. It's about self-fulfillment. ChrisGuillebeau.com is the website for more. His previous book was The Art of Nonconformity. This book is published by Crown Business. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Chris Guillebeau. Mr. Guillebeau, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So you've having looked you up on the internet, you've done a lot of interviews on this book already. Does it get tiring telling your story?
Does it get tiring telling my story? Well, you know, in some ways I'm telling a lot of other people's stories, mm-hmm. and so that's fun, and I'm happy to talk to anybody who's interested. I mean, like, I've really enjoyed working on the book and going out to talk about it, so no, overall I don't think it's been tiring.
Now, the previous book, The Art of Nonconformity, that was self-published, was it?
No, that wasn't self-published. That was with Penguin. It was a different publisher, the $100 startup.
Pardon me. But the tour, from what I read of it, was a long tour like this one, right? Was it?
Correct. It was. Yeah. The first tour was a 50-state tour, and then every province in Canada as well. So I did 63 stops. So that maybe that's what you were thinking. That actually was kind of a, you know, self-driven tour. Mm-hmm. It was put together largely by my readers. So it's a little bit different process.
Yeah. Does it surprise you that a lot of readers have taken to your message, that they want to meet you, that they want to hear your story, say?
You know, what I've tried to do is to make it less about me as much as possible and more about them. And so I think a lot of them are coming, you know, they're coming out to see, maybe they come out to see me and talk with me a little bit, but I always try to put the focus back on what other people are doing, and I encourage them to meet, you know, other folks, and we try to make it more of a fun event as opposed to like a traditional, you know, boring book reading.
Yeah. So let's, invariably we have to, for people listening who may not know anything about you or what these books are about, let's fill in sort of the backstory.
Sure.
When was the last time you had a real job?
In some ways I've never really had a real job. I did, you know, like when I was a teenager and really young adult, I did have some jobs. My last job was at age 20 or so. And I learned I wasn't a very good employee. I wasn't very motivated at working for someone else, and I wanted to do anything I could to kind of strike out on my own.
And then when was it for you that you found out that you could do it on your own?
So the last job I had, I pretty much left when I was 20, and then I kind of started off on my own. I imported coffee from Jamaica and resold it in the U.S. and Canada. And then from there, I just kind of learned a lot of different things, you know, how to kind of design websites and how to put together an offer and how to create a sales page. And, you know, for a long time, it wasn't very strategic. I wasn't building a huge business or anything, but I was able to support myself and make a good living. And then eventually I became a writer and told more people about it.
Are you making a good living now?
I am making a good living. I'm making a good living as a writer and still as an entrepreneur and traveling around the world. And I produce, you know, a variety of products and services, and it's going very well.
Now, when I ask that question, people will think that I mean in terms of money. Mm. But in terms of, say, personal fulfillment, freedom, and creativity, I mean, it's obviously good for you in that regard as well, right?
Yes, great question. And I would say that's actually more important, you know, than making a good living financially. And even many of the people that we talked to in the book, their primary motivation was freedom, and their primary motivation was how can I, you know, create a project that I love, where I do work that I love, but I also have freedom to do the things that I love and spend more time with my family and maybe travel the world. So definitely that's been hugely worth it.
Is that hard to find, though? Is that hard to achieve, freedom and fulfillment?
Is it hard to achieve? You know, we talk to people from all over the world who had done it in different ways. So I think it's certainly possible. I don't want to say it's easy. I do think it's important, you know, that we have to work hard. I think, you know, most of us don't want to do less work. We want to do work that we enjoy, but it's definitely going to take a process.
Yeah, that's one of the things in the book. It's not less work, it's better work.
Mm.
And what have you found helped you achieve that?
I guess I was always motivated to to work. I just wanted to make sure that the work, you know, I was doing mattered. I think, I hear from a lot of people in corporate jobs who say that their work is kind of evaluated on the number of hours that they're there, not necessarily on the quality of what they produce or what they deliver. And so that was something that always kind of bothered me. And, I kind of learned to switch my focus to focusing on deliverables, on what I could create and share. And that's what a lot of people in the book did as well. Like they, as they started a business, they focused on the things that brought, you know, income and other forms of success, you know, to the business, as opposed to focusing on, you know, how many hours they sat behind a desk or whatever.
Now, not everyone can live like this, though. I mean, there are those that want to amass a great fortune, and then there are some people who want influence and power, if you will. Is this book for those sorts of people?
I would say the book is for anyone who's dissatisfied in their work and wants to make a change. I would say the book is for anyone who, you know, hears these ideas about freedom and says, I want more freedom for myself, but I'm not sure, you know, what the next step is. There's already a lot of motivated people out there. I wasn't just trying to write an inspirational book. I wanted to write something that was actionable. So I would say it's for anybody who wants to create change in their life. And even if for people who have a day job and are happy there, you know, I think a lot of people like the idea of having some additional security, something that would allow them, you know, maybe different possibilities or different opportunities in the future. So I'd say it's for anyone who's interested in those things.
What about the idea that innovation is simply for the young? What about older people that may have worked, I don't know, they've already worked, say, a great deal of their career? Or is it permissible for them to seek change?
Not only is it permissible, I think a majority of the people that we actually talked to in this study were a bit older. And, we talked to some young people, but a lot of people already had a lot of career experience but wanted to do something different, or in some cases were kind of forced into doing something different, you know, by a changing industry or a changing world. So no, I think that's actually quite common. And as for innovation, you know, I think sometimes people get hung up on the idea of innovation and the need or the desire to create something that's never really been done before. I mean, most business ideas, they're not necessarily, you know, highly original. Often a lot of business ideas are just improving upon something else or even just entering a space where somebody else, you know, already is. So I always encourage people to think about the question of usefulness more. You know, instead of trying to create the next iPhone, you know, or the next, technology company, think about, you know, how you can make someone's life better. You know, how can you make someone happier or make something that's helpful to them?
You touched on sort of the changing world that we live in. The economy has changed. Is starting up a business today easier than previously?
I think it depends on the kind of business, but in many cases it certainly is. These days we have access to this global marketplace. We can go online, we can connect with people from all over the world based on shared values and shared interests and worldview. I think at the same time more and more people are becoming comfortable using the internet, more and more people are comfortable with online shopping. And also I think a lot of people are also thinking differently about risk and security and what's involved in starting a business. And it used to be that starting a business was seen as something that was very risky, and you might be rewarded for doing so, but you wouldn't be rewarded without taking a lot of risk. And a lot of the businesses that we looked at, they spent, you know, well under $1,000, in many cases less than $100. And so if you spend a lot of money and you don't take very long, you know, getting that idea to market, I don't think it's very risky at all.
Now, you mentioned that one needs motivation, the desire to change themselves. Are there specific skills, though, that one would need? And are these skills that you teach in this book?
What we teach in the book is about using the skills that you already have and sometimes maybe deploying those skills, you know, in a different regard. And so I always encourage folks to think about, all of the skills they have, not just maybe the obvious ones. A lot of people think that they only have a certain amount of skills, you know, some kind of skill that they were trained for a specific career, and those skills couldn't be applied elsewhere. But there's a couple of examples. One example from the book is Kat Alder, who was a waitress in London, and she was a very good waitress. She was always getting good tips and lots of compliments, and she was good at, you know, gently upselling people to dessert or whatever. And one day someone said to her, you know, you're really good at this job. You'd also be good at PR. And at the time, you know, Kat didn't even know that PR stood for public relations. But, you know, she also had a background in music, and she was able to create this PR company kind of using the same skill that she had. You know, she was a good communicator, but then she applied the skill, you know, to a higher-paying business as opposed to the low-paying job of being a waitress.
You identify about 1,500 people. Obviously, you can't write about all of them in this book. So we get to meet some of them. Do you find that in the people that you survey, these 1,500 people, that there's something that they've got in common, other than things that we've already touched on, say the motivation and realizing that one needs to change?
Yeah, great question. I think, first of all, many of them were very different in the sense that they came from all different walks of life, and they were people of all ages, and they're from all over the world. I think maybe they did have a couple of things in common, though, and one of those was curiosity, just being interested in different things, asking good questions, and the other one was probably just the willingness to get started and the willingness to actually follow through and take action, because, a lot of people, if you talk to almost everyone, I've been on book tour, and every night I go out and talk to the audience, I say, who has a business idea? And almost everyone has some kind of business idea, but I think maybe what separated many of these people was, they actually took action on those ideas, and they kind of, put their foot forward and decided to see what happened.
Now, are there any millionaires that came out of all this that you found?
There are some millionaires. You mentioned in the beginning we had a criteria that everyone had to make at least $50,000 a year from their project. That was just our baseline, just because that's kind of like the average, income in North America. A lot of them did much better than that. There's a number of multi-six-figure businesses, and there are a few businesses that made, between $1 and $3 million a year. I kind of focused on people who chose to operate their business more as a lifestyle aspect. They did the business because they wanted the freedom. They didn't necessarily want to hire a ton of employees and really scale up. But even within that framework, there's certainly, a number of people that did very well.
Is $50,000, is that a realistic expectation for revenue?
I think it depends entirely on the kind of, business. Some of them can do much, much more than that. And yeah. One thing that we found is once you have a successful business, even if it's a low success, even if it's $1,000 to $2,000 a month, it's often quite easy to adjust some things and tweak some systems in that business to really increase the revenue. So we encourage people to get to the first sale as quickly as possible. How can you get your first client or your first customer or your first sale on the internet or in a retail shop, whatever it is, and then kind of through the ready, fire, aim method, then let's start taking a look at, how else can you make money and where else can you get customers, and there's a number of, processes that we use for that. But everyone, that we talked to did at least $50,000, and many of them did much more than that per year.
Now, the micro business, that's it's almost a revolution around the globe now. We've seen that in recent years. Mm-hmm. It is something that works in our world, the first world, say, mm-hmm. and as well as in the third world, right?
It does, and I think, in the third world, people have always been entrepreneurs. I used to live in West Africa, and I could go in the village in West Africa, and everybody's, responsible for their own income. There's no formal economy, and everyone's kind of buying and selling. The difference is that if you live in the village in West Africa, for the most part, you're still somewhat confined to selling to people in the same village or at least in the same area for the most part. But for those of us in the first world or the second world, we have access to this global marketplace, and that is what enables, the micro-business revolution. And I do think it is a big shift, and hopefully, more in the future, more people in the third world will have access to it as well.
So let's say you've subscribed to everything that's in this book and decided to take it on head on. The last chapter in the book asks a very good question, but what if I fail?
We looked at a lot of different stories, and almost everyone that we looked at, had some kind of, trial or disappointment or setback that they went through. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a failure. With the whole model of reducing risk, not spending a lot of money and getting to market quickly, I'm not sure it is a failure if, the first idea or the first project doesn't, do what you hoped it would do. A lot of people did regroup, and kind of go forward. A lot of people, tried something different, and that second thing, was more successful. So everyone's always afraid of failure. Some people are afraid of success as well, or some people are just afraid of change and transition. But, I would say overall, I'm much more interested in success, and I was personally inspired by all the stories in the book. And so my whole goal with it was to tell their stories well, and hopefully, bring honor to the stories that to the accomplishments that they had made happen, and then also present a path for the reader to do the same thing himself or herself.
I read at the in the intro that you've been to 175 countries. It's probably more than that now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 185 now. So I have eight more to go still.
Yeah. What do you do after that goal's finished?
I mean, that's a great question. I'm still trying to figure that out myself. This has been my project for about 10 years now. So in some ways, it's a big part of my identity, and I'm sure I'll keep traveling and doing different stuff. But I'm also, you know, I'm also a little bit apprehensive about it coming to an end. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I suppose one does that. One has to I guess, reassess and reset goals, I suppose, as they go on, right?
Yeah, I suppose so. I guess I'll find out next year.
Yeah. In terms of the amount of time that you travel, I mean, how much of the year do you spend away from Portland?
It's roughly half the time that I'm home. I'm home about half the time and gone about half the time, and it varies as to how that kind of breaks down. But I usually kind of get into a schedule of home for 2 weeks and then gone for 2 weeks. Depending on things.
Yeah. I mean, one wonders, is there nothing to do in Portland or nothing to...
You know, there's lots of things to do in Portland. You know, it's great, but actually when I go home, I'm kind of a homebody, and I just kind of stick to, you know, my little neighborhood where I have everything that I need, and, you know, I do my work, and I connect with my friends and family, and then I go back out and see the world.
Yeah. Do you still play jazz?
I don't, actually. No, I kind of stopped playing music when I started writing.
Yeah. In terms of... your legacy. Have you thought of that, of what you're leaving behind, say?
I think about it every day, but I'm not quite sure what the answer is. I mean, overall, you know, the big vision is I want to help people live unconventional, remarkable lives. I want to encourage people, encourage people toward self-employment, but, you know, maybe bigger than that, encourage people toward, you know, adventure and traveling the world and connecting with other people, but then also the ultimate question of, you know, how can they, you know, improve the state of the world for others. And so I don't know if I've completely figured that out, but those are the broad themes that I look at.
What have you learned that business school couldn't teach you? And are you suggesting, I mean, the book doesn't suggest that people drop out of school, right?
No, the book doesn't suggest that anyone drop out of school, but I do think, you know, when you say what have you learned that business school couldn't teach you, you know, business school doesn't teach people, for the most part, you know, how to run their own small business. For the most part, business school teaches people how to be mid-level managers in Fortune 500 companies. You know, business school teaches people how to kind of adapt to an existing system, and that's fine if that's your goal. But if it's your goal, you know, to have this kind of freedom project, or if it's your goal to, you know, start this business based on your own skill or passion and then connect with, you know, your own customers and clients, then that's, I don't think that is something that you would learn from business school.
You said earlier that we shouldn't be hung up on finding the new technology, inventing the new iPhone. And I've heard people ask you if you had an idea of what's next, say, or what's the next big thing.
Yeah.
But are there areas, though, that we need to focus on, say, or that you perhaps could predict, you know, is a good niche for someone to, or a vacuum to fill, say?
Yeah. Well, you know, as you mentioned, I do think it's much better to focus, you know, more on the question of, you know, how can you help people? What can you do that's, you know, interesting and useful that will improve someone's life? I think that's kind of the, you know, the standard that will always be there as technology and other things change. You know, it ultimately comes down to relationships and value. I mean, to answer your question directly, I do think there's much, much more growth to come in this whole area of the knowledge economy, you know, of providing specific services and, you know, selling information about how to use things, about how to, you know, embed yourself, about how to, you know, access different things. I feel like there's a lot of businesses that we looked at, you know, that had essentially created value out of the transfer of knowledge. And so there's a lot of different ways that can be done, but I do feel that's something that more and more people are embracing now.
Can there be too much freedom, though?
Can there be too much freedom? I guess it depends on what kind of freedom you're asking about, you know?
I mean, they, what's the old line that idle hands do the devil's work? I mean, I guess one isn't idle, but I suppose, you know, we're ingrained in the society that endeavor and hard work, you know, sort of, you know, if you pursue those things, you'll achieve great success.
Mm. Yeah, so I guess, I think it depends on what kind of freedom you're talking about, because I think most people don't necessarily want to have idle hands, you know,
yeah,
all the time. I think most people don't want to spend, you know, all of their time, you know, on the beach or on vacation or something somewhere. I mean, that's great. Like, if you had all the time and money in the world, you know, what would you do next week? And people would say, well, I'll take a holiday. Well, that's great. What would you do the week after that, you know? I think most of us, you know, really do want to work, and we want to do work that's meaningful. And so for me, when I think about freedom, it's a chance to do something that I enjoy and that I find personally validating, and hopefully that other people appreciate as well. So that's the kind of freedom that I'm interested in.
Now, you're in Vancouver this week. Where's next for you?
Indeed, yeah. I'm finishing up the first part of the $100 Startup Book Tour. So I've done about 21 cities. I did 17 cities in the States, and I went to London for the UK launch, and now I'm finishing up Canada. After this, I'll be home for a couple of weeks, and then I'll start seeing the world again. So book tour has been good, but I look forward to kind of going out to get those 8 remaining countries.
Indeed, yeah. This has been fun talking today. Congratulations on this book. Continued good luck with it.
Great conversation. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. The website for more, chrisguillebeau.com. The book is called The $100 Startup, Reinvent the Way You Make a Living, Do What You Love, and Create a New Future. Crown Business is its publisher. Its author, Chris Guillebeau, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Lutton.